Sure can, Tamara. Loud and clear.
Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night, and this is when we start. And this is the ABD guidebook class. The ABD guidebook is a classic written by E.J. Gold way back when, and it's one of the foundational pieces in his entire body of work. And we're taking this opportunity to study it in depth. We've been through a number of books in this manner over the years, and the method that we're using to do it is that we have formed each book. There are 22 books. Each book has a great depth to it. And so we have formed subgroups of our broader group, and that subgroup then focuses on the particular topic that particular book presents to us. And so we've done that with book one, Ula, and now we are in the midst and in the final, I believe maybe the final installment of book two, which is Ur-Rahman. And we've had two rousing presentations by the group. And if you go on the website, wingsofchaos.com, under guidebook, you're going to see their material. And I'm about to post another one that was prepared for this particular meeting. So we'd like to get started. And I was just wondering, Elka and Penny, how would you like to proceed here? Would you?
I think Elka is supposed to begin. I can to open the
okay.
Space.
So Elka, why don't we now begin with you, and this will be the third installment of book two of the ABD guidebook. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is from a book called...
Closer to your phone, please. Closer to your phone.
Is this better now?
Much better.
Okay, so here are a few excerpts that Fanny was able to pull out from a book called Tantric Abode of Compassion. We can put the reference of the exact title of the book on the website. So we took out certain points which we felt were summarizing the entire chapter for this particular meeting. And the first point that we would like to talk about would be equanimity. So I will just read from the quoted text. It says, without deeper understanding of equanimity, one will always divide others to friends, enemies, and strangers. Thus, whatever we do will be contaminated and suffering accrued from our thinking and action. The purpose is to reduce them, their effect from the past. All suffering came from what we have done in the past. Therefore, whatever we do now, how we think should be checked and thought over from the knowledge presented here. That is the seven cause and effect meditations, beginning with equanimity. So equanimity, as we've gone through in the earlier presentations, is about treating your enemy with compassion, treating the friends with compassion, treating your family with compassion, and all beings everywhere with compassion. And the idea of I am one, there is no other, bringing everyone to the same ground and considering each one of us as the other. One small point I'd like to put in here is when we talk about compassion is there's a saying, I cannot quote the exact monk, but I came across this on Facebook, and Pani also incidentally mentioned this, and I saw David mention the same thing last evening on Facebook on Practical Work of Self blog, is that compassion cannot be complete unless you have compassion towards yourself. So in the process of, and it is a strange, strenuous journey towards bodhisattva, wherein the practitioner, the person who is practicing towards this wisdom finds a lot of instances where he is troubled with these inner disturbances of fear and guilt and so on and so forth. So the idea is to, and once several times one ignores their own reactions to the self, which is very important. So the idea is that you have to be compassionate towards yourself. It's only then the true compassion, the picture of compassion can be complete. Now I'll hand over to Pani for the discussion on the second point of the summary.
Okay. That one also cannot help all sentient beings to become enlightened when one hasn't achieved enlightenment. But that is not true. One takes the responsibility to become enlightened for the sake of all sentient beings, while on the journey, walking the path, serving sentient beings, thus enlightenment can be achieved. Thus the inspiration, conviction to become enlightened, and the practice taking of happiness and welfare of sentient beings go hand in hand together. Working for others. When there is evocation of compassion, then the work is to take everyone with you. The more you get compassion, the higher the level of purity of soul. The more intent is transformed from focus, from benefit of self to the benefit of the other. So it's altruism. It's a form of altruism and altruism. Yes, and we'll talk about it later. So we'll see. Now I let Alki to go to the next point.
Okay. The third point we would like to talk about is emptying oneself for compassion to prevail. And I'll read
closer to your phone again. Closer to your phone.
Okay, is this better?
It is.
Okay, great. By clearing our mind of all thoughts, making it empty doesn't make it a meditation practice. It is impossible to meditate on emptiness if one hasn't formed a conceptual understanding of it. Therefore, upon hearing and learning about the non-inherent existence of person and nature of phenomena and the six elements, that is earth, water, fire, wind, space and consciousness, one meditate on them constantly for a long time, identifying and investigating their existence. Thus one creates a mental concept of emptiness. Through meditation, one can arrive at an understanding that emptiness and dependent arising are compatible with each other. So in the process of going through the voyage and the stages of transit, it is a process of clearing out the space of all the emotions and all the thoughts of the mind, reaching to the state of emptiness or blankness, which we call as a meditative state, so that there is space for the clear light to enter. I will just read out the commentary. Emptying the vessel so that the light can pass through, cleansing the emotions through various practices, hearing or action. The more you transform the elements within you, more is the space for peace, which is the base of compassion for anyone else. Stillness or centeredness is the way for letting the natural blooming happen. Then we talk about, there's another book that we came through and we're going to be reading from this, Fanny. I will start here. Compassion is the cause of Buddhahood. Compassion is the cause of Buddhahood, which is the effect. And this is a bubblegum statement. You know, we can go on talking about it. Therefore, it is even better to praise compassion than praising the Buddha. When one praises, I forgot to quote the text. This is The Way of Compassion by Tsongkhapa. And I continue to read. Therefore, it is even better to praise compassion than praising the Buddha. When one praises an act of compassion, it means one can identify with compassion of others and rejoice at that act, thus collecting merits. One also reduces one's jealousy of others. And we can then Tsongkhapa mentions certain causes of bodhisattvas. It goes like, there are three causes of a bodhisattva, that is a compassionate mind, non-dual wisdom, and altruistic mind of enlightenment, where the root cause is compassion. The altruistic mind of enlightenment wishes to achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings, where the object of attainment is one's full enlightenment, and the object of intent is to help all sentient beings. Both must be present to be considered as a cause of altruistic mind and enlightenment. Compassion is present in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end of the path towards enlightenment. So we feel here that compassion is a portal to get through. And the more we focus on it, it is like the root cause. Once you start practicing it slowly and slowly, it has the power of elevating to high levels, because it is such a vast form which comprises of altruism, it comprises of relating with others, it comprises of dropping the self. And I think once one has done that, it's the most easiest portal to get closer to Bodhisattva. So the next step is to cultivate compassion. A compassionate mind is all sentient beings who have any of the three suffering of pain, change, and also being composed. And so, always ready to undergo pain, which is the nature of the Bodhisattva. I take all pain, I give all joy, which is the Urdhraman state, I call it. And Fanny, if you could take over from effects.
The effect, compassion is the cause of Buddhahood, which is the effect. Effect, I have to cultivate altruism, love, and compassion, assuming the burden. Those are three precepts. Altruism, love, and compassion, assuming the burden. Without these three precepts, I can never understand the way to cultivate towards enlightenment mind. If I care about the people around me, and I understand that the person around me, no matter they are my friend or enemy or neutral now, somehow we have karmic connection for many lifetimes. By understanding the suffering that I am facing and they are facing, I will therefore learn to cultivate altruism, love, and compassion. But without assuming the burden, it is hard to free others. Thus, it is essential to begin at this life, where I can still understand the Dharma and I can still practice. With the mind that I can't control my rebirth, people around me to suffer on wandering in samsara, thus, if I am truly sincere in caring for the people around me, this life is the chances for me to cultivate these three precepts and benefit others. now Alki can continue on the...
Actually, this is the last point of our last point of the summary that we tried to create of the chapter, and it comes closer to our point of emptiness, because we also feel that there's a great connector between the second book. I think it's a great closing point for the second book, because
closer to your poem again.
Yes, so I'll just read, I came across this stanza from Practical Work on Self from the chapter called The Pond. The machine has no real emotion. What we call emotions in ourselves are automatic reflexes of the mental centrum in response to the motor centrum's organic reverberations. Removing the effects of these reverberations eliminates in ourselves the larger part of our negativity and mechanical suffering. And I will read from the excerpt, "Nothing is not emptiness. By clearing our mind of all thoughts, making it empty, doesn't make it a meditation practice. It is impossible to meditate on emptiness if one hasn't formed a conceptual understanding of it. Therefore, upon hearing and learning about non-inherent existence of persons and natures and phenomena, and the six elements," I'm repeating this paragraph because I feel this is a great closing point, "and the six elements, that is earth, water, fire, wind and space, and consciousness, one meditate on them constantly for a long time, identifying and investigating their existence. Thus one creates a mental concept of emptiness. Through meditation, one can arrive at an understanding that emptiness and dependent arising are compatible with each other." So the only purpose that I see that Ureman has put forward for us as a group is, and us as individuals, is to realize that the idea is to keep emptying each second, which becomes, once it becomes a practice, then the emptiness comes more naturally. And when the emptiness is there, then the gates of old Rahman open, which is giving up the self and being able to relate with the other and look beyond oneself and look at the other as one. I think this will end what Tani and I have to say here for now.
And we would like to suggest for next week, like every evening before you go to bed, to look at your day and where compassion, where did you see compassion in your life and in your heart during that day, and where maybe you didn't see it either, but to observe it as a daily practice for the next week. A suggestion, and at the same time with the pond exercise, you can use it too to observe that machine.
Yeah, even if it is thinking, if it is a good idea to make it, if some of you feel that while you're doing this practice for the next week of taking out 5 minutes before bedtime and counting your moments of compassion, see how you feel during those moments of compassion and how you would like to increase the number of those moments of compassion. If you can do it, if you want to share it with the group, that will be a great thing. We can put it on the blog of as a practical exercise into practicing compassion for a week. And it will be lovely if people can come back with experience. Otherwise, it is such a joyous experience that it will be worthwhile thing to do anyway.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Does that conclude your formal?
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much concludes the more formal presentation. And I have a few observations and questions, but others as well. How are we doing over there, Dan? Or people on the phone, if you have questions. I'll start, okay?
Because if I heard you too right, one of the things that you seem to say is that in order to cultivate the depth of compassion, you have to like assume the burden. Like you have to see the other person. Is that right? So you have to be able to allow yourself to see the other person. And what is this term, assume the burden? What do you think, Harry?
I think that it means that we take on someone else's pain and give them our joy.
So, if I remember correctly, there was something in the Bible about taking on the sins of the world.
I do recall something like that.
And what did the Buddha do when he was sitting there under that big tree? He saw the suffering of mankind. Yeah? I mean, doesn't it make sense that if we could stand in the place of Ur-Rahman and we could actually see other people and be in this kind of like objective, absolute compassion, of course we would be Buddha, because we would no longer be ourselves. Because we would flow into the world, and we'd flow into it with a kind of a open-hearted compassion that would infect others.
David, I think that also you can add the idea that the ladies outline very well, that you have to have an impression or an idea of emptiness to be able to actually put it into practice. And it really doesn't mean nothingness. It means everything all at once. It's a fullness. This means the absence of any separate thing. There's nothing that's separated from anyone else.
But I don't really want to be you. I want to be me.
And you want a color television, too.
I do, and a Mercedes-Benz.
Yes, I'd like to have some gold medals and things like that.
You've got equanimity.
Oh, here's the big challenge, Harry. She's saying, is that equanimity?
Well, I guess if we wanted everybody to have one.
So it's different than me, 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 me. It's you finally begin to discover us. And us.
We're all in the boat together.
We're in the boat together. And there's a couple of remarkable quotes. One is T.S. Eliot in, what's his big poem? Wasteland. Wasteland. And in it he says, there's a phrase, we are the empty men leaning together. We are the hollow men, we are the empty men leaning together. That just frightens me whenever I hear it. 4, where he's talking about working with others, he says that only free men can have friendships. And then, and as it, he says, as it were, they go about their life in delight because they open to other people. They aren't the end-all, be-all. This is a very tricky point. Very tricky point. Because you have to work on yourself, but part of that work is working on behalf of others, which is very difficult to do. Can you really be with another? I mean, I have like this objective dream from time to time that I'm going to be a monk in a little cell on this hillside overlooking the valley, and that's it. But, you know, it's a very nice life. I have my books there, the beauty of outside. No, because what I do is, because I say that we reach out and interact with others, we participate with others, and that is not the way of the hermetic monk. The hermit has a beautiful life of so-called prayer, and that's easy. It's difficult to be with others. You're entrapped when you work with others. So you get a form of work that is just so sweet. If you recall, I don't know why this came up, in several decades ago, I participated in a talk called My Dinner with UJ. And in the talk, at the very, very end of the talk, I asked the question, I said, now that I've had these fine pastries, how do I get back to the bakery? And the fine pastries are the made in the bakery of friendship working together. We don't start out asking who are going to be our fellow travelers. And it's the fellow travelers, the people that have the ability to voyage with you in these rarefied zones that we've gotten into. That's a form of interaction that is rare and good. And these individuals put in many hours working together. The people in book 3 are doing that, book 4, book 5. This is, and there's the output of what they do, but then there's the magic, the alchemical magic of the working together as well. You work together, you bring your being together with another and you share it, and there's something unheard of that occurs at that time when we're working in this manner, because we are not the hollow men, we are not the empty men leaning together. We are proud individuals carrying a spark of the divinity, and when we're together, we don't get together to kill time, we get together to bring the best of life together. Because my God, look at this. Where can you find individuals of this quality? I look around the room and I know who's online and on the phone. And go ahead, Dan.
So we have some comments. Rocky says, to me, assume the burden is akin to what you with negativity of any sort. The best thing we can do is to not manifest resistance or reaction to it, but deal with it inside.
And this is, and who said that?
Grocki.
That is book 2, Practical Work on Self, called The Pond, which Elka put at our doorstep. Again, thank you, Grocki. It's exactly right. Read that chapter, book 2, or chapter 2. Go ahead.
Alkan Ishra says, it's a quote, it is only when you silently reside in your heart that you can reach closer to the truth. And Grant has said, assume burden. All beings are suffering, but in the present moment, where is suffering? Can we have the presence to be in the present moment with others? In a way, we have to give up our own suffering to be in the present.
Great, great point from, who's that? Yeah, Paul.
Grant,
great, 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 great. In the you are working hard with another and for another, you don't have time to indulge in your particular suffering. There's no time. You're engaged. Your being is engaged. So, is that it, Dan?
Well, there was one more. Another suggestion from Gepholz. Suggested exercise for this week. Before sleep, review moments of compassion from the day.
Let me ask you, Grant, and we'll start with Grant since he put his foot in it. Give me an example of a moment of compassion or opportunity compassion that went through your day today. I'm going to ask a lot of people this question, so get your notebooks out. Tamara, you're next, by the way. I'll be asking you next, okay? The reason I'm saying this is because what's going to help us define how to look and how to do the exercise in this next week. Are you ready? Okay, so we have a volunteer from the vast audience here. Go ahead.
Okay. So a moment of compassion today was, it's not a big sacrifice, but in what I had to accomplish, taking time to do anything other than what I have to accomplish, and I did that. I helped somebody figure out how to put in a printer cartridge. I don't know why it's doing that. I push talk. Oh, that's right. Because I have the phone like coming over the PA. Okay.
So you, in the midst of your busy day, stopped and helped somebody do that.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. What did it feel like when you were doing that? I mean, what's the vibratory sensation that occurred? What was the arc? There was an arc of feelings that went on.
Well, it was reinforcing the empowerment of who I was working with, because it was really a cooperative. I didn't do it all, and it was a cooperative thing, and I had to remind that other person what they contributed and that they really did contribute. And so there was a feeling of camaraderie.
Okay. All right. You sensed that at that moment.
Yeah.
Do we have an answer?
Gopal says, today, I listened to someone for a while with full intent, while another part of me really wanted to hurry and rush.
Good. So that's an example of the, and I was trying to get from Marvette too, there's a struggle to overcome the machine, and when the machine awakens and the will of the machine goes down, then the essential self can be with the other person. Okay. How you doing, Tamara? Is she online? Yes. How's she doing on a question there? I don't hear her talking. No?
No.
Okay. Elka, did you have an example of compassion in the last 24 hours?
Maybe 2 hours. So I woke up and
speak into your phone.
Yes, David. I was reading, I attended the meeting for book 3 after a while, after not having attended the last 2 meetings. And I always request the person who comes to clean the room, she's an elderly lady, I always request her to finish my room first and then go do other things. right when I started reading, she started, you know, dusting and making noises and everything. And my immediate response was to pause and just understand that, you know, she's cleaning with so much of love and so much of affection that she does care about the space and she's keeping it clean. So there's, so I was compassionate and I told her very politely, though she doesn't understand Hindi very well. I spoke to her, I told her the same thing thrice, and then she understood and she started doing very well. I felt it was a minute of stopping and understanding that why is she doing what she's doing instead of seeing what is happening as
you.
An interruption. For me. Yes.
There you go.
But Alki, it was perfect because you were literally reading about, you know, do not become distracted.
Yes, Tamara, you were there.
Yeah. It was perfect timing. She was the compassionate one.
So, Tamara, is that you?
Yes.
So, were you going to answer now?
I'm sorry, I was on a phone call. Did you ask me a question?
I asked you a question in unison. We said, what was, Tamara, what was your example of compassion during the day today? She hung up on us.
Well, I guess I got, you know, taking that phone call in the middle of it, you know, in order to answer someone's question. No, I think, you know, my act of compassion was to be of assistance. There was a morning meeting, and I needed to help in order for that meeting to happen. And, you know, I was tired and didn't want to do it. But once I moved through that resistance, then the space opened up and my mood, you know, shifted. So sometimes what we, I find that if I'm doing something to be of service, it actually then becomes of benefit to myself too.
Dan, go ahead. Thank you, Tamara.
Very nice.
Tangel says, the people in one of our subgroups' patience in teaching me how to do Second Life was an act of compassion and much appreciated. And Shelley Boyce says, while working with another online, we discovered that we could not solve the problem. I felt compassion for both of us, for our struggle and failure, but also pleasure for the cooperation.
Just patience is a very important skill or an important state. Patience, I was just reminded about what Harry said, that patience is very important to be able to work with compassion. To develop compassion, one has to also have patience.
Thank you.
We'll take a couple more, if anybody else wants to share.
I think David. I completely agree with what Fanny is saying.
I didn't hear you.
Yes, I think it takes patience to be in the moment to moment, like being present in the present moment is also taking the 2 extra seconds and being in that present moment is the patience, and once you are in the present moment, then it becomes easier, as Kapal said.
Yep.
Hey, Dave, I wanted to just bring in another aspect of this.
Great.
One of the things that I'm indebted to Gurdjieff for pointing out to me is that the absolute, as Gurdjieff says in Beelzebub's Tales, the absolute suffers. because of the collision between joy and sorrow. So these are two opposite conditions, which the Absolute is in the middle of. And so as we evolve ourselves, we learn to separate multiplicity and diversity on the one hand, which is natural to our ordinary state, from the unity of everything existing on the other end. And between those two, we begin to realize our higher destiny as beings. That brings joy to us, and perhaps through experience even more so. And then, of course, when we look back at our ordinary life, we experience sorrow. And boy, I hope I said that right at the beginning, the collision between joy and sorrow. And we look back at the other side of our, the other part of ourselves, the sorrow of having to deal with the material creation around us and the unexpectednesses and that kind of thing. And so between this kind of joy for what we've achieved and the awareness of daily necessities, between that joy and that sorrow, the collision is this suffering, not suffering like a tragic accident, suffering from just an awareness of these two diametrically opposite conditions. And what that produces in us or causes us to become aware of is the compassion of the Absolute, who is unable to directly intervene in any particular situation, but is able to clearly cognize the joy that he experiences about the unity of everything existing without contradiction or differentiation, just its pure spirit, and the Absolute's sorrow that he is, in fact, you know, kind of a messy creation that not much can be done with. So between those two is that suffering, and as we enter into that ourselves, then we begin to have compassion for others, because we realize for ourselves how difficult it is to make progress, to even discover such an idea, and then how difficult it is to evolve and how long it takes. And so we actually end up having compassion for those around us, because we know that they're faced with the same challenge that we ourselves addressing ourselves. So anyway, and in that sense, compassion becomes a natural byproduct of our own evolution or the development of our own beingness.
One of the things I heard in the examples that I listened to tonight was reflected in an experience I had this morning. I was asked by a friend to be on a phone conference with a colleague of that friend to help with business advice. And noted that when I started, I didn't want to do it. Okay? I reacted to it. I was bothered. Just allowed that to wash over me, and then I started listening to the individual, exercise of patience. And when I began engaging with the individual, and I could see the difficulty he was having in accomplishing his particular business vision, I was compelled to want to help him at that point. That was the evolution of that. And that's a good example. And everybody said kind of the same thing, from Grant to Marvette, Tamara, you know, that they didn't really want to do it, and then they did. So there's a persistence that occurs, and if you allow yourself to do it, to stay with it with patience, then you discover this other kind of alchemical gold that's there. That what occurs when you're engaging with that other person. It's quite interesting. at that point. So, and another element of it, I think, is cultivate objectivity towards yourself and to others. When you see something, rather than reacting, just note it. I note this. And then there may be less judgment when you're with the person. You just note it. And there's some people that do that really, really, really well. So I really appreciate this group, this little Rahman group. You know, they really were going away with exercises to do, and maybe we'll point in the next week or two to hear what people have to say. Thank you. Thank you, Elka.
Thank you so much, David. What a pleasure it was working on this book.
Yeah, what a pleasure. What do you got over there, Dan? Are you ready to?
We have more comments. Starling says, I work with patience and compassion every day by working with patients. They offer me much opportunity to work with brute, hell, and human realms.
And just walks in there with big boots and just keeps persisting. And trained, too. She's got training now. There are hundreds of these examples, holding herself in that position. Very, very strong to do that. It's like, Dan, I notice that sometimes in the music, you get called up to start playing the piano, right? You have less fear now because you've done it a few hundred times. So if we can start practicing, like Elka and Penny and Ivan are suggesting, we have less fear of exercising patience with our patients.
Which is a very nice segue to the next comment. Rocky says, though hungry before eating, I made a point of visiting and giving a biscuit to the neighbor's dog who is alone all day. It is also a discipline that helps build a habit of compassion and awareness to others.
Good. Great thing, Starling, that she brought up. There's a huge story behind that. Great story. So, we doing okay over there, Dan?
Yes. DePaul's is signing off, but
take care. Thank you. And Pat, did you want to say something? You had a. You said, told me you had something you just wanted to say at the end of the. Sure. Administrative thing.
I'm looking at our projected.
He's not on the speakerphone. Come over here, Pat.
I'm here, yeah.
Pat, come over. Sit here.
I'm done.
And
thank
she's
you.
She's getting it. Speak into
it. You like that? Okay. So we had our group meeting this morning with Book 5. And some of our group, besides having already done Book 1, have participated in Book 2 and are now also working on Book 3. And then we're coming in on Book 5. And I wanted to just...
Also 4. The 4 people
well,
are working too.
Just, we weren't there yet. So what we were stating for ourselves was it was very hard to hold the books individually to themselves, not shared among all the other impressions and content that we've been absorbing for the last 10, 12, 15 weeks, I don't know what it is, on this text. So I went back to the original vision of the journey through this book, the guidebook, and the scouting expeditions that are the little subgroups that delve in depth into the content and the reverberations and the associations and the meaning and the significance and the proposals, et cetera, that come from our time together on the subgroups. And I thought I would make a suggestion administratively about being on more than one scouting trip at a time, which is scouts go out and they come back to base camp. And they may not be sharing with the rest of the expedition everything that they discovered on that one little foray. They're going to collect all those impressions and share it with everyone kind of in a consolidated fashion, because when you're doing your forays out, you don't know for sure that that path you're going that's down by the creek might get rocky or muddy or whatever until you've gone all the way down that little path and come back from it. So, in relation to doing more than one book group at a time, come back to base each time. So you're reading in book two and you're presenting to the group, and you're reading in book three and you're getting ready to meet with the group, and you're not yet presenting to the larger group. So where do you go to be at base with the book? Not in each section, but in the whole thing. That's what I'm proposing that you have as your stance, as the scout. You're out there looking at book four, book five, book three, you know, and maybe you're even reading ahead, or maybe you're rereading behind. And what is the context? My suggestion about that is the context is the process that we share. So each moment that you're spending with your group or this group or yourself, the process engaging with the text, that's the base at that moment. The way to keep yourself from going, so much I'm doing that, which, you know, we're all susceptible to, the overwhelm, the do-do-do syndrome. Take yourself for a moment into, somebody had the formulation of it that's always very nice, George, what's the formulation, the non-hysterical personality. That's the big one. I was going to go for the more, the more personal modality. Put yourself in a moment of freedom. Put yourself in the stance of, I don't need to be doing anything, thinking anything, with whatever is in front of me. I'm not projecting ahead or recalling behind. And I know that is a big deal, but this book has so many treasures. And our process of delving these treasures, that's what's yielding all of these manipulations that we can do internally and interactions that we can share. That's where I went. Administratively, don't worry about trying to keep it straight which book is what and which content is which. just be present at the moment with the text in front of you at that moment.
Yeah, no one needs to worry about that. It's, as a group, we course correct as we go, and we're always discovering brand new things. And for instance, for me, for the last 3 weeks, the concept of the ultimate compassion and unconditional love was very important for me, very important just this time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a suspicion that we're going to be heading toward book three pretty soon. Is that right, George?
Next Wednesday night.
So next Wednesday night we're going to have a presentation. What's the name of that book anyway? I keep forgetting.
U-Malik.
U-Malik. Wow. All right. Well, we don't know what land we're going to wind up there, but we'll find out next Wednesday at 7 o'clock or so.
Yes.
As we continue our journey to the ABD guidebook by E.J. Gold. Thanks for coming tonight, everybody. We look forward to seeing you.
Thanks for hosting us.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.